A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Napalm smells best in the evening. It's not worth believing what you heard.
Hello, listeners. I'm Matt Gourley. This is I Was There Too, the show where I talk to people present in the great scenes of movie history. Today, Marcus Henderson from Django Unchained and Get Out. He's an actor, a ukulele player, a chess teacher no less, and as you'll hear from this interview, just a great storyteller. He plays Big Sid in Django Unchained. He's right behind Jamie Foxx in the opening scene Chain Gang, the one where Christoph Waltz comes to free Django. In Jordan Peele's Get Out, he plays the groundskeeper Walter, famous, of course, for his running straight at the camera scene, among many other great moments in the film. If you haven't seen either of these films, there's some spoiler discussion. For instance, cover your ears right now. 3, 2, 1. In Get Out, what it's like to be a young black man playing an old white man who's then playing a young black man. And non-spoiler warning, another installment of what it's like to have a very memorable encounter with Samuel L. Jackson. My thanks to you, Marcus. And also my thanks to Nick Morgan, who made this interview happen. And if you can successfully connect me to someone ideal for this show, you yourself can come in and sit in on the interview. It's the least I can do. Please email me at iwasthere2pod@gmail.com with your hookups. Not your personal hookups, just if you have someone to suggest. And while you're at it, why not give the old show a handful of stars on iTunes? Maybe try 5. That's off the top of my head. Anyway, thank you for listening. Enjoy.
The films, Django Unchained and Get Out. The years, 2012 and 2017. The roles, Big Sid and Walter. The actor, Marcus Henderson.
Marcus Henderson, in the opening scene of Django Unchained, when you are handed the shotgun by Christoph Waltz's character, who's basically in the foreground with Jamie Foxx, it seems like an entire little play with you happens behind this action. It's one of my favorite things in the film. You are a slave in irons, handed a loaded weapon. It first registers on your face as like a disbelief and then a kind of contemplation of freedom and then like disbelief again. What was your preparation for that moment?
I think just, all those circumstances, just thinking in my head like, oh, man, okay, yeah, all these circumstances are happening to me right now. And I get handed a gun, like, is this a test? You know, I got to, like, think, you know, these are things that have to run through your mind as it's happening so it can be authentic. Because we probably did it, like, maybe 3 or 4 times. So I imagine, like, the first time was probably the best. But, you know, but, yeah, it's just, like, something that you just got to keep fresh in your mind. I think just in general to play a slave, it's kind of a mind fuck because, you know, you're playing at it, you know, and I don't know, like my whole life, it's not been something to play about. It's not been something to like take lightly.
That's a question I initially had for you too. Like with the obvious huge element of that in the film, how much of it was discussed formally and how much was discussed informally between takes?
There was a ton of like meetings and talks before we even started filming with Quentin. And, you know, just just to make sure we were in the right headspace. I feel like it now, thinking back at it. I think he was just like really trying to prepare us, you know, mentally for like what we were about to endure. And I thought he took great care at that also, you know. Even with something so such a vicious subject and topic, I think Quentin did his best to take great care of his actors and his team while shooting was happening. So, mm-hmm. you know, I really big ups to Quentin for that, you know.
Yeah, because it's handled obviously very seriously, but also very lightheartedly at times in this
yes,
movie. And so
yeah.
how much discussion was there on how to handle that tone and the change between tone?
For me personally, you know, there was a million other things that was going through my brain at the same time as, like, this moment that, you know, that I didn't even realize was happening, I think, because I was just so, like, oh, shit, I'm doing a movie, and it's so many people around me right now, and, like, it's so, you know, like, it's a,
it's
you
a
know, I'm used to, like, the stage, you know, like, theater. Like, yeah, you performing for the crowd, but you performing for a tiny little dot. You know,
a red light.
Yeah, this little yeah. red light that just, you know, and that takes focus, like some serious razor sharp focus. And watching Jamie do his thing, I think, really made me aware of that. It's just a lot of people around watching you at the same time. And I think the pressure of that in the moment was more of what was happening. And that sort of like perfectionist theater brain. It's like, get it right, nail it. You only got one shot in front of the audience, you know?
Right. In a film like this, did you guys rehearse at all?
We got a little bit of rehearsal in, especially, like I said, like before we even went to location, we were like meeting up at the studio and, like, you know, Quentin just sitting us down, having these talks about what he was thinking, what he had in mind, like getting us prepared for like what we were going to endure. Like, we were like literally naked out there, and like it was freezing cold.
So what was the temperature, do you think?
You know, what's funny is in order to get that steam up from the ground when we're walking through the woods, they had to like keep spraying the ground with water.
Uh-huh.
So it's like freezing cold, like had to be like maybe 20 degrees or something, man. Like, it was freezing. Wow. And like they're spraying the ground with water. And we just got to like walk across. You know, another cool thing about Quentin that, you know, that gives you a sort of, for my experience, I can't speak for everyone, but from my experience, it makes him such a cool dude. It's like we had these little rubber feet made for us, this prosthetic feet. They call them booties.
Uh-huh.
And we were wearing throughout, you know, the scenes.
So they look like human feet.
They look like our feet. They made actual molds. The guy is the same.
Oh my God.
Man, I'm blanking on the producer's name of The Walking Dead, Greg Nicotero.
Uh-huh.
Him and his team created the effects, you know, for Django. And the feet looked like our feet, like molded perfectly like our feet. It was this one particular shot that Quentin really wanted, and of our feet going across the thing. And he comes in our tent. We're just sitting in the tent. And he goes, hey, guys, you know, I'm just wondering if, like, you know, I really want to get this shot of your feet, but it's just not cutting in on the camera with these booties that you guys are wearing. So I'm wondering if we can get a shot without them. And, you know, it seems like it's just a small sort of suggestion, a small whatever. But what it really did was it allowed – he gave us permission to be a part of it. He didn't just come in and go, I'm fucking Quentin Tarantino, take off those goddamn booties. You know, he didn't do that. And I know that there are directors who will do that. And I felt like, man, that's cool. That's, yeah.
yeah.
You know, like that, it doesn't, it's not a huge thing, but it speaks a lot about a person's character
yeah.
you know, in that moment. So, huh. Yeah.
What was your audition like for this film? Was it more of a meeting or?
it was a audition for Vicky Thomas. And I came in and I auditioned for D'Artagnan, the one that got eaten by the dogs.
Yeah.
I was auditioning for that. And then, you know, you just kind of feel ridiculous rolling around on the floor. You just got to have like the craziest imagination. For me, honestly, I just feel like a regular guy going through all of this sometimes. It's just like, man, I'm a dude from St. Louis, Missouri that, like, you know, just kept following, like, this trail of crumbs that somebody left behind, I feel like. And here is where I am. Uh-huh. And, you know, I never, like, grew up saying, like, oh, I'm going to do this, even though I watched a ton of TV and a ton of movies, and it felt like another sibling to me. But I never imagined doing this. So when you ask me, like, you know, be eaten by dogs on the floor, I'm like, what? Hold on, wait, okay. And I do my best in rendition of that, but my imagination just wasn't taking me there at the time, you know, on the drop of a hat. But yeah, you know, the callback meeting was, it was interesting. I was going to for an interview to teach chess. Yeah.
That's right. I read that you're a big chess player.
I love chess, man. Oh. But I was going for an interview to go teach, and I totally bombed this interview. Like, no, they do not want me teaching their kids chess.
So, like, a private tutoring for chess?
It was like this, like, company that, like, teaches chess, and they're, like, you know, I went in and I, like, made a whole song up, like, based on the Hokey Pokey on how to castle. And,
oh, my God.
You know, like, I was like, this is pretty cool. Everybody else was just going up there, like, you take C4 and, you know, move to H6 with your knight. And I'm telling you, like, what? No, man, you got to make it fun.
So what was it like? You do the bishop, rook,
you
four to the...
You move your king on out. You move your castle in. You move your king on out. And that's how you win. I don't know. You do the castle.
That sounds effective to me. How old are the kids you're teaching this to?
They range from, like, 5 years old to 12, you know. But come on. Come on. They were just trying to stifle my creativity. Anyway, point is I bombed this interview because they were just like, get out of this office right now. And I was like, all right. And then I get a phone call and my agent's like, what are you doing Friday? And I was like, I don't know.
Not teaching chess.
Not teaching chess. Yeah. Well, Quentin Tarantino wants to meet you. Well, let me move taking my morning shit to 12 o'clock. Perfect. You know, and it was just like, man, it came at such a time.
Do your nerves flare up when you get that call?
It does. Yeah. You know, like, because you feed into all of this, you know, like, influence and nuance of Hollywood and fame or whatever. You feed into it and until you actually are in it, and then you realize, oh, this is just a bubble of people who made up something that other people outside of the bubble care about. Cool. I mean, but it's an awesome thing that, you know, that there is something to distract us, you know, from the everyday so-and-sos.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got this phone call, like, you want to meet with Quentin? I was like, of course I do. Like, and, you know, it was a callback. And what he was doing at the time was he was assembling that, I think, that just the slaves throughout, you know. So it's like office full of black people, just like, I want you as a slave. You. There you go. And Quentin is Quentin. Like, love him or hate him, he is who he is. If you think it's a facade, then he's living that facade as well as possible. But I think it's quite authentic on him, you know, and that's just who he is. And he hasn't changed it for anybody. He's just got loads of money. That's it. You know, like that, you know, that's all it is. And, But in my opinion, through my dealings with him, he took great care. He wasn't like just around, like, you know, bullshitting around with it. You know, it was something that he really took seriously. He felt like this was his baby, you know? So yeah, I can't fault him for that.
And where did the meeting go from there?
You know, sort of like he just kind of grouped us together in different groups and gave us, like, you know, wanted us to reenact, like, you know, he would, you know, give a line from the player from the movie or whatever, and we have to react and, you know, stuff like that. You know, it was interesting, you know, to see the different actors, you know, that were in that room, and, you know, to see where we are today. And, you know, it's a cool thing, man. It's just another, like, story of, like, where we were in the moment to compare to where we are now.
Yeah. Wow. So you travel up to Lone Pine, you said?
Right, Lone Pine.
Okay, and is this just like a one night shoot or
no?
Extended?
We were there. We were hired for the whole shoot just in case, you know, he wanted to plug us in for the opening here. He could just be like, "Yo, all right, put him on a plane. They're coming
God.
Out."
So
you think about it. I was kind of a slave to the contract in a sense, you know. So in my real life, I'm playing a slave, but you know, actually a slave to the contract. I couldn't do anything else.
Right, you had to sit around and wait.
I got offers from other, like when I auditioned for something else, they'd be like, "Oh, well, yeah, we'll take Marcus," and you know, and then it'll be like, "Yes, perfect, this is great, big movie," and then they'll be like, "But we need him to cut his hair," and it was like a no cut your hair clause, like.
But was there any solace that you took in the fact of, like, "I'm sorry, I can't. I'm doing a Quentin Tarantino movie."
You know, you feel that way until you don't have any money.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, you sure I can't take that job? Because that's like an easy, okay, all right, cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, and I was young.
How old were you?
I was like 26.
Oh, man.
You know, and I mean, I'm saying that like I'm still not young, but like, I'm fresh out of school. Like, I've been in school my whole life. And then I get out of school, and then, like, you throw me in a Quentin Tarantino movie, and I'm like, yeah.
Jeez.
You throw me a couple of $1,000, and I'm like, I made it! Everybody gets a hot dog from Pink's on me.
Was that a real thing you did?
No. Oh. No, I've never been there. I think it's Pink's Tacos, right? Or is it a Pink's Hot Dogs?
Yeah, Hot Dogs. Oh, okay. Although, apparently, they're blue this week for the Dodgers. And I only know that because I saw a headline.
I wonder how. Is that kind of like the Black Whopper? Because
what's that?
Halloween, they came out with the black bun and the.
Oh, that's like the Shamrock Shake.
Oh, God. Yeah. All these things just turn your poop black. And I don't trust any of it. So. Yeah.
Okay. So did you and Tarantino discuss like the character of Big Sid at all? Did you come up with your own backstory? How did that work?
I think, you know, he just sort of gave me an idea of what he wanted the moment to be.
Uh-huh.
And I tried to give him, you know, the best rendition of that. I can't remember what he said to me exactly, but, you know, he pretty much just wanted me to trust my instinct of, like, somebody hands you a gun and you're a slave and you're not supposed to have it. What do you do?
Like, I love this moment so much. It's so good. I'm wondering which of the takes, like, did you do a spectrum of reaction of, like, it got bigger to less or less to bigger?
I think the one lesson I learned in film before, or somebody taught me, was like less is more. And that's even for stage.
Yeah.
You know, like less is more. And when it comes to reactions, you know, like you wanna be truthful, but I wasn't trying to like buck my eyes, like, you know, where they would be like, "Oh yeah, that's it right there."
Yeah.
That's exactly what they love black people to do. Yeah. Just a little wider. Just a little. Could you just smile a little? And then what's making it so fucked up is that you know you can do it, but you're like, "Nah, I ain't gonna do it."
That's
just
so interesting.
Just out of defiance.
Though, because I feel like, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, in Get Out, when you play Walter, you do have this big, big smile. And I'm wondering, does that have something to do with playing the white version of the black?
What do you think what do you think the executives expect? What do you think people expect? You know, I hate to say it as in like.
Feel free.
As a group of white people, I'm so sorry.
They're calling.
Hey, this is Amari Cheatham, who I met on the set of Django, who's one of my closest friends now.
Who did he play?
He played the guy in front. He was the first slave in the front of Chain Gang.
You want to get him on the horn?
Hey, Amari.
Yo.
Hey, man. I'm doing a podcast right now.
Nigga, call me back when you can.
Okay. Got it. Okay. All right. Okay. Got it. All right. All cool. Right. Yep. And there it is.
That sounds important.
Yeah. You know, I think that's, I look at it like there's a machine, and this machine is called whiteness. And not everybody feeds into it, but it's there. It's something that's been set up since the beginning. I don't know who, why, when, where, or how, but it's there now. And I get it. And everything that we see that comes through the TV, that goes in our brains, that, you know, we hear in mainstream radio, all goes this through this machine of whiteness that allows everything to exist as it is now. That's why people call it black movies when it's like, oh, is Get Out a black movie? Because it has to go through the machine of whiteness. It has to make sense to people, like, all right, but it's not one of those black movies because, you know, they're not, you know, all the leads weren't black. You know, so it's like they can't,
all right,
can't like place it anywhere, you know. And I think that's kind of what made it a phenomenon in itself.
Uh-huh.
You know, you asked this question about, am I playing is that coming from playing? Yeah, exactly. Because that's the expectation I have for someone if they were, if a white person were to be black for a day, that's exactly how I would expect them to, like,
that's amazing.
Act like. But it's a mindfuck all in itself, right? Like, just the idea of, like, this is, you're going to be a actual black man playing a white man, playing a black man who really just, you know, doesn't have to be anything else but himself.
Right.
Any other time, but when the black person comes, he has to play.
It's like three layers deep.
It's crazy.
I mean, we'll talk about that more when we get to Get Out. I have a couple more Django questions, but I find that so fascinating. With this cast, it just seems like casting is 9/10 of the work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Vicky Thomas is amazing. Uh-huh. Yeah, you got to look her up, man. She's casted everything.
So what was the dynamic like between, say, Jamie Foxx and Christoph Waltz working together, working with you guys, just their process?
Great, man, they were great. They were great. I was really intimidated before I got there because you just hear a lot. You hear, you know, people who've met Jamie before, or like people who've met Jamie before, whatever the case may be. There are stories that have crossed my ears, and I was like, well, I'm prepared, you know. I'm prepared to, like, you know, whatever he's going to bring, I got to be prepared. So he wasn't like that at all. And none of those stories felt true.
Really,
you know,
interesting.
Off of him, man. He was you know, lightweight when I think about it, he was kind of like a mentor because he, you know, like I said, I learned from him so much just being behind him when he had his scenes. And, you know, just some of those scenes, I don't know if they took those takes or were looking, I'm just kind of lost in like what he's doing behind, just trying to watch, listening to him. And next thing you know, I pull me and Amari are playing chess, and then he is a great chess player. You know, I never knew that about him, but we sat there and played chess in the tent, you know, like, and everybody wants to play once a board is out, man. So like, everybody was playing, man. It was great.
How did you fare against Jamie Foxx?
I never beat Jamie Foxx.
Really?
Never beat Jamie Foxx. You know, but the thing is that I think I was pretty, I'm not gonna say pretty new to chess, but I just love playing the game. You know, it really allows you to get to know the person across from you. It really opens up your mind and like the expansion of thought and what the possibilities are. It's an amazing game. I think not just for, you know, your mind, but for your spirit.
Yeah, so, socially too, I imagine.
Yeah, and socially, you know, and like you don't have to talk. You just play, you know, and let that be your talking, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things I appreciate about it, because I don't like to go to people with, you know, I can bullshit, you know, but I'd rather be real with mm-hmm. people. And, you know, when you give me that opportunity and we can, you know, sit there and play and then, like, get to know each other through that, then it becomes easier. I don't know if he would, like, you know, remember that or, like, be like, hey, did you play chess a lot during Django Unchained? Like, what? You play no chess? You know, but, you know, I'm like, all right, cool.
What were your thoughts that if Will Smith was originally intended to play Django?
It would have been completely different.
Yeah, I'm curious to think what you think it would have been like.
It would have been a completely different tone. I don't know. Because I'm not commenting on acting. It's just two different styles. Jamie Foxx and Will Smith are two different styles, man. And like, and one's not better than the other, but they definitely do two different things. I mean, you can look at the Jamie Foxx show and the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Same formulas, but totally different shows. Totally different shows. So, and I mean, one was WB and the other was NBC. So, like, you know. Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, let's talk about Walter and Get Out. So we touched on it a little bit, but I want to talk about how you did approach that a little bit more in depth and going 2-3 layers deep with that.
Yeah.
Also, knowing that you are essentially playing this actor Richard Hurd, did you study him at all?
Did or? Not even know it was him until the day of.
Really?
But Jordan kept telling me, like, we got the perfect guy. We got – this guy is perfect.
So he's cast, like, more off of you.
Yeah. Yeah. So he cast me before he cast Richard Hurd.
Well, it makes sense, yeah.
And so it was just like – and when I met him, it was just like immediately like this love for him, you know, like me and my buddy George, who's a transpo guy down there, we play ukuleles together on set because I work with him on another project.
Uh-huh.
And we were just playing, and Richard would come into the van and start giving us all these, like, old Hollywood stories. And so I really got a chance to, like, listen to him and, like, you know, so – because I only got that one, like, scene, really, where you hear me talking. And it was something about, like, the way Richard talks, his patterns and things like that I would listen to.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, yeah, I get, like, it's that old Hollywood, you know, kind of thing that I can appreciate. I kind of miss a little bit, you know, but it had wonder and attraction to it. It was all precise. I thought it was amazing.
So how did you end up in this film? What was your audition story like with that?
My agent, Jennifer Beeden, called me and was like, Marcus, this script is crazy, but Terry really wants you to read it. You should read it and go in for it and try it. Because Terry Taylor, who's a Blumhouse casting director, she cast me in Whiplash.
Uh-huh.
And that's how that relationship started. And so I came in for it. Like, you know, when I first read the script, I was like, yo, they really making this movie? Like, okay. And then
did your agent mean crazy in the sense that, like, nothing's been done like this, or just what the hell?
It's just out there.
Bad shit.
She's like, it's out there, uh-huh. You know, and she knows that I like weird stuff, you know, and I'm more into, like, doing weird things than I am, you know, doing things that I'm pretty sure I could get cast at,
yeah.
You know. So she sent it to me, and I read it, and I was amazed, and I read it again, and I confirmed, and... like kind of like, yes, please. And I knew, like, Jordan was coming off of the wave of, like, Key and Peele. So I knew it was, like, going to be a big thing, you know.
Had you watched Key and Peele?
Not much, yeah. Beforehand. My wife was a big Key and Peele fan, so she would be watching it. And then I would kind of catch it in between, like, you know, whatever I was doing. And then once I knew I had the audition, I started watching a little bit, and when you read the script and you, like, know the show, it's crazy how much every character sounds like. Like, Jordan could literally play Get Out as every character, and it would be just as good, uh-huh. I think. Like, it's hilarious. It's hilarious in that kind of way, like, and it's genius in that kind of way. Like, his voice is all throughout it, you know? But I went in for Terry, and I did it. We did it a couple times, and I just remember really wanting to commit to this voice. And I just thought to myself, man, why do I sound like I can sound like myself, but, like, still. But, you know, I just kept doing it, and then and I was like, oh, whatever, man, you know, forget it. 3 days later that day, she was like, hey, you got a call back. You're going to meet with Jordan on Thursday because this is like a Tuesday. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I start thinking, like, wow, okay, really close. I'm really close. Okay. And then I go home and I prepare, you know, like, keep going over the lines because I want to be flawless with the lines. And I kept messing up this one part. So I was trying not to mess up. So I just, like, you know what? Fuck it. Go in. Just do what you do. And I went in, I immediately, like, made, like, he opened the door. A guy who went to Yale also was coming out. And And I we know each other from around. We weren't in the same class, but we know each other from around the circuit. So it's like, oh, what's up, man? How you doing? Yeah. And I'm thinking like, oh, shit. Well, of course. Well, of course they brought him in. Like, fuck, I'm not going to get this. So I see him out the door, and then I make like a show reference to him from Key & Peele. Like, I say something. And then he's like, he just kind of laughed it off. Like, this dude's weird.
Wait, you're talking about your friend from Yale?
Well, no. He left, but okay. Jordan, when I saw Jordan, oh, yeah. I made a reference to, like, ass slapping. I was like, hey, we slapping ass here or something like that. He's like, he just kind of caught on quick. And you know, then he was like, all right, you ready to get down to it? I was like, okay. And we were doing it. And then the part I kept messing up was I added a line. And I said, one of a kind, top of the line. And that's not in the original script. And he was like that line alone, you adding that part is essentially what like got our attention about like this dude is like he kind of gets it, you know. You know, and that was cool because that just it was something I couldn't stop messing up on. It's just something that kept happening naturally every time I did it. And he was like, keep that. And then that was like December 8th. And then, you know, Hollywood kind of shuts down in between. Yeah. I didn't hear anything. I didn't know anything. Nobody was telling me anything. And then, like, ref back up. One day I'm, like, at the park with my daughter and just sort of, like, wondering how the year is going to pan out. But, like, I'm just out in the park. We're just playing songs together. And all these kids just, like, start coming up and singing songs with us. And I'm like, yo, this is pretty cool. Like, life is sweet. We're, like, walking home and all of a sudden – Jennifer calls me and is like, hey, you got the part. What? You know, and it was just like, yeah, you know, it taught me this lesson about like just enjoy what's around you, what you got already, what's there, you know, because then all the other stuff comes, you know, like there will be a million other things out there, you know, that would be just as exciting as what Get Out was and is and, you know, so hold on to those precious things around you.
Yeah.
You know?
I saw this when it came out, but I rewatched it for this interview, and it is just as entertaining on a second time through knowing what you need to know and watching it in that context. It's like the sixth sense in a way, you know,
where
you get to watch your character in a totally different light. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I also read about your character's backstory, and I wonder if this is true. I think that Jordan Peele said this on the DVD commentary that Walter never got over his loss to Jesse Owens in the 1936 Berlin Olympics, and that is why he continues to run.
Yeah.
So how much of that was discussed? Did you guys?
A ton of it. Really? Ton of it. In fact, he just told me to run. He was like, start running now. Start running now. And I've never been like a runner per se. But I am a sprinter. I love to sprint. But that was a long distance, man. He had me run some long distances, and so he told me to keep running. So I was, you know, kind of running, waking up in the morning, getting a run in the morning, trying to run around.
Which is probably good, right? Because if you're doing – how many takes of that did you do?
Oh, man, we did. Honestly, so, like, I started back – when you watch the movie, if you ever watch the movie again and you look all the way in the back and you'll see, like, it's like this one little hole opening – way in the back, like that's where I was like kind of like hiding out. And when they say action, like it's a PA behind me, like go. And then like I just gotta like come out like out of the gate like as fast as I was, and I would run all the way from there to the camera like three takes. Then it was like, all right, I think we're good on that, but can we? All right, we're gonna move you closer now to the tree, and we're gonna run you from the tree to the camera. So if you look back in the movie and see where the tree is compared to where I was right, man, that shit was far. So I did that maybe like four times. And on like the very last take when he was like, all right, this is the last one, like I pulled my hamstring. So it's like, fuck. So that's somebody completely different.
Oh, no kidding.
Who is running past him. Like that scene where he looks, that's somebody completely different.
So did it impede your process on the film that much more, or was it just kind of like a needed a day or two to heal?
You know, they did me real good, man. They got me like a massage at the spa at the hotel we were staying in, and like made sure that I was okay. Like, you know, made sure I stayed off of it.
And, yeah,
you know, they really took care of me, and you know, That was really huge. I felt like it came back on the very last scene when I'm running. I think you can tell. When I look at it, I can tell. I'm like,
you feel it.
I'm just like, fuck. Damn it. These thick thighs. Shit.
With all this running, I'm sure you're aware of the Get Out Challenge, of course.
Yeah.
So has that run its course? No pun intended. I mean, because that was going all over other movie sets. And
yeah, man.
Do you have a favorite?
Shoot, man. There were a lot of different ones. For me, I thought it was interesting. Here's a little known fact, and people probably don't know about it, but there was this song. All right, first of all, there's this movie back in the 90s called South Central, and it starred Glenn Plummer. And it was just like, it was just an iconic movie in the black community. Uh-huh. Like, we were like, yes, this movie is everything to us. And the name of that character was Bobby Johnson, but he was called OG Bobby Johnson in the thing. So then, like, there's this song that came out about two, three years ago, and it's like, it became a big hit, and it's called OG Bobby Johnson. OG Bobby Johnson. And man, this song was just so good to just hear it loud in your ear. And it was a hit, and everybody was celebrating this song. I thought to myself, man, that's gotta be crazy. He's gotta feel so good right now. And I remember running into him at an audition on NBC lot, and I was like, it's Glenn Plummer. Dude, have you heard this song about you? And he was like, yeah, I heard it. He's like, yeah, I was like, you excited about it? He's like, yeah, they ain't giving me no money. They ain't paying me. Like, it's not helping me in any way right now. And I was like, oh, man, that's, I was kind of bummed to hear that. That prepared me for, in this weird way, it prepared me for something like this. Like, most people don't know about that song, but it was in my atmosphere and uh-huh. I knew about it. But, like, a lot of people know about this Get Out Challenge. Like, I got friends who were, like, overseas who were sending me emails of their friends that were like, look, dude, they doing the Get Out Challenge over here in, like, Taiwan, man. It's crazy.
By the way, if you don't know, it's when you run at the camera.
You run at the camera just like and Walter, just break yeah. right. Yeah. Like, it's, it's funny, too. They said, man, you ran so fast, we have to move the camera back. Let's move this camera back a little bit. We didn't expect you to come that fast.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. I felt like I did what I need to do.
In that final scene, you basically go from evil grandpa to what's the savior or even like the deus ex machina of this film. It was so tense and action-packed, yet you have just kind of one little tear drop out before you finish yourself. So many levels going on there.
Yeah.
Quick transitions from tense to subtle to dramatic.
Yeah.
What was your process like on that? I mean, that's quite a ride.
it's the magic of a movie set, man. It's beautiful to
In what way?
Be able to take your time.
Yeah, okay.
You don't have to rush it,
And you have a director that's supporting that.
Exactly. It's like that's when that's the moment that you need in order to give the effect that you need, that becomes one of those moments where we got time. On film, it looks very quick. Jordan knew that moment was important and we took our time. But for me, it was just like being released from something, releasing the chains, as they say, mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing. I looked up hypnotism and what that does to somebody, what it does to the body, what it does to a person afterwards, knowing that they've been hypnotized. And, this is sort of like it's a trippy thing because most people tell you that they don't even remember, but we got to remember in the sunken place, you see everything. Hmm. You're there the entire time. It's just something that's been clouding you. You haven't been able to get out. So it's a trippy thing. I think about a lot of, you know, I made this great revelation the other day when I was listening to the Beatles channel about how much Paul McCartney understood I don't know, maybe I'm making a bold statement here, but how much he understood the plight of the black life when he made Blackbird, you know. Mm-hmm. he has this line at the beginning. He was like, singing in the dead of the night, take these sunken eyes and learn to see. Hmm. And I went, whoa, wait a minute, sunken eyes. Sunken place, sunken eyes. Oh, my God. Because it's like, man, you know, like this state of being that sometimes people feel like are important or like are dutiful, just aren't, you know, but we're made to believe that they are. And it's hard to come out of that when you're not even at the level to see that, you know, there's a wall built up to where you can't even see over it on what's on the other side. They've made it that high. Mm. So it's, you know, I think a lot in that moment comes out, because when you finally, as they say, get woke, you know, to the idea of what's happening around you, you know, like that's just, it's heavy. It's heavy.
Well, Marcus, I can't thank you enough for doing this. I really appreciate it.
I do, man.
Yeah,
of course.
Was great to talk to you. Where can people find you, and what are you working on now?
I don't know, man. Find me in the astral life. Take my sleeps around 10 p.m. Start dreaming around like 11, I guess. So
look for you around 11:30 when you hit REM?
Yeah. Okay. I'm on Instagram. It's like the best thing I can do that I can keep up with, because it's too much out with all the other stuff. Yeah. So like Marcus Henderson 314. It's really easy. And just like post cool stuff that I'm doing. Pictures with celebrities that I probably barely talk to, but was like, I get a picture with you, I guess. You know, nah, it's cool, man. You know, I always find it interesting how, like, you know, I really wanted to be one of those people who like go, can I get a picture with you? But it's something in me that keeps me from doing it, because I just feel like, man, for one, like, you're just a person, just like me. Now, it's different when you've made an impact on my life and some shit changed because you were a part of that. Like, that's something different. But just to randomly go up to somebody because somebody else deemed them somebody in the world, like, no. And where I really learned my lesson, just to take it back to Django.
Please.
It was the premiere. Never told this story before in the interview, and I'm sure millions of people are going to hear it now. But like,
well, I wish I could make you that promise.
No. But like, so it's the premiere, right? And because of shit, man, this is awful. I don't remember what school shooting it was. It was a school shooting around the December 2012 ish. Sandy Hook, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Sandy Hook, and like. So they canceled the premiere. Like, uh-huh. They don't want any attention on it like that. And, you know, and it's just like they think it's best that they just, like, not promote it like that. So we had this L.A. premiere, but no lights or cameras, nothing like that. So it was my first premiere, and I'm thinking, like, I got all ritzed up with my lady, you know, who's my wife now. And, like, and we were, like, out, and – you know, all of a sudden, you know, I'm like around all these people, like Magic Johnson, you know, like is talking to me. And he's like, hey, man, good work on the film. This is great. And I was like, oh, thanks, man. And I'm like, it's Magic Johnson talking. Why is he talking to me? This is great. And then I see Dick Gregory, who I had the pleasure of meeting when I was in college.
And he just passed away.
Passed away. And I had the pleasure of meeting him in college. And he looked at me and said, brother, I always forget names, but I never forget a face. Where do I know you from? I was like, Alabama State, 2004. He's like, yeah, that's right. Montgomery, Alabama, da da da, and just went in the, you know, his whole like,
oh my God,
where he knew me from, what he did that day, what he ate, you know, he's sharp, you know, and so it was just like this great night of like just beautiful love and people who were there to celebrate this film being made, because it's really hard to make a film. And so we go and we watch the movie and we get up and like my wife goes, oh babe, there's Sam Jackson. My mom would love a picture with us with Sam Jackson. And I was like, yeah, no problem. Because A, Sam Jackson did a movie called A Time to Kill.
John Grisham? Yeah. I just recently watched that. How funny.
His wife in that movie was my college professor.
Oh, my God.
My mentor, Dr. Tonya Stewart. She brought me into the game of all of this. So, you know, and she knows him quite well. So it was like, oh, of course, like, I can just walk up to him on that merit. But hey, I got another reason. Number two, I went to Yale. I just graduated from Yale. And that's, you know, pretty much the place that gave him a birthright to acting, you know, in all of these August Wilson pieces and his work at the Yale Rep. So it's just like, yeah, of course. And with him with that. And why not? I'll just go for a three. We're in this fucking movie together. So I have no problem with approaching him. I walk up to him. He's talking to somebody, and they're just sort of like, you know, going back and forth. But he can feel me sort of just right there. So he, like, turns and says, may I help you? And I was like, my bad, Sam. My bad. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just wondering if you would snap a pic with me and my lady. I said, just like that. And he looked me dead in my eyes and said, and what do you say? And, you know, you ever like in like a movie when you like you space out into that person's brain of like all the things in the world, like everything just turned black. Like just this is the quickest second ever, but everything just turned black. And I thought to myself, I could become famous by killing Sam Jackson. I'll become known in Hollywood as a dude that choked Sam Jackson out at a movie premiere that wasn't publicized, and like it'll only be rumor and tale of who was there to know the real accounts. So yes, this is what I'll do. And then I snapped back into it and went, please? And he said, damn. And then the man said, damn, Sam, you ain't got to do that to him. No, they got to learn. I was so taken aback. Like, wait, what? I couldn't believe, like, everything I believed about him just, like, crumbled.
This
like,
is not the first story I've heard of about him in that way.
But that's the thing. I also, so through my, like, sort of, like, fuck Sam Jackson, I'm never going to, like, you know, whatever, I've grown to a point of like, you know what? That's who he is. Like, that's what he does. Uh-huh. It wasn't just, it would be different if it was an isolated incident of just me. You know, I feel differently about it now because on real talk, like some people, now what I did wasn't bad, but some people are bad. Some people will just very like roll up on you right. And just be like, yo, what's up, man? It's cool, right? Bam. Yeah. And then you just like, whoa, wait, how you doing? What's your name? Something. But, you know, like, but all he asked for is a please, which, you know, honestly isn't that bad because I'm trying to teach my daughter to say please, you know, when she asks for things. So, hey, kudos, Sam Jackson. You taught a young brother a valuable lesson.
Message received.
Message received. I appreciate you, man. Yeah.
thank you, Marcus.
No, thank you, man.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.